What's up, everyone? We are pointless in the new era with Orange County Soccer Club. But unfortunately, we're going to start with something else this episode to talk briefly. We'll get to it. Let's get this thing started. Welcome to the Podcast of Champions. This is the Orange and Black Soccer Cast.
This is the Orange and Black Soccer Cast, the first and only podcast dedicated to Orange County Soccer Club, its fans, and supporters. Follow us on Twitter at @OCSC_SoccerCast or on Facebook at Orange and Black Soccer Cast.
How's it going, Orange County? Welcome to another episode of the Orange and Black Soccer Cast, the first and only podcast dedicated to Orange County Soccer Club, its fans, and supporters. I'm your host, Ray Samore, and I'm here to take you through this journey as we discuss all things Orange County Soccer Club. Let's find out who's helping me out this week. First, the original, Mr. Dylan. Dylan, how are we doing?
We're doing all right. I'm not super thrilled to be having this conversation again, but clearly, we needed a refresher course, so let's get to it.
Yeah, we'll find out what that conversation is first, but we got Brad with the Everton background. He's trying to maybe rep Everton for the last time in the Premier League for a while. How are we doing, Brad?
We're just slowly watching as the Everton fans drag them out of the abyss. A 5-goal wonder clinic on defensive counterattack against Brighton Hove. Good game.
Awesome. Who else we got here? We got the bearded man himself. Apparently likes lions and shields. That's Mr. Larry. How we doing, Larry?
I'm Sunderland till I die. I'm Sunderland till I die. I know I am. I'm sure I am. I'm Sunderland till I die. Let's go, Black Cats. Hey, guys. How's everybody doing tonight? And Dylan, I have an offer for you. You want it now or you want it later?
Later, please.
Hopefully there's no copyright restriction on that chant, because now we're going to get dinged by Facebook, Twitter, YouTube.
It was probably so off key that it doesn't matter about copyrights.
Totally beside the point.
We got one more person joining us, and this person joining us for a very important conversation. We're going to have to start off this episode. This is the president of Pride Republic and LAFC supporters group. And that's Mr. Luke from LGBTFC. How you doing, Luke?
Great to be here, guys. I don't have an English Premier League team or English Championship League team. I'm probably feeling good about that one right now, because it sounds like there's a little bit of hatred going around this room. But good on the Toffees, I guess, huh?
There we go. Right. So Luke is joining us. LGBTFC, which is a podcast that caters towards the LGBTQ side of things, covering LAFC. Like I said, also the president of Pride Republic, which is the LGBTQ plus supporters group for LAFC. As many of you know, Orange County faced San Diego this past weekend. And shortly after that match, we learned that there was a potential use of a homophobic slur in the match, which caused Orange County to come out with a statement, and they opened an investigation. We're not here to question or debate who may have said what, and directed at who and what the punishment should be. It's too early for any of that. The club is looking into it. The league is looking into it. I'm sure the players' union is looking into it. But what I want to take a moment to do is just talk about that use of that type of language and any kind of derogatory language, whether it is, you know, based on race, religion, creed, gender preference, whatever it may be. As many of you know, we stand for, you know, supporting all and being one big happy family and big sports family and really a big world community. So when things like this happen, it's difficult. I know there's a lot of people that might come in and say, it's just a word, you know, and they don't really mean it in that way. They're just sort of angry or something like that. You hear those things all the time when any language is used. But the reason we wanted to bring in Luke in is we wanted someone that can help us out with this conversation, and help let us know and educate us as to why certain words are not really the greatest thing to be used and why we shouldn't be using them and how they affect a community like the LGBTQ plus community. So Luke, share with us. I mean, I'm sure you know you follow soccer, LAFC. I would assume the culture is similar there. You don't condone any kind of abusive language or vulgar language when it comes to you know, slurs and stuff like that. But obviously, it happens in soccer. I've heard it in the supporter section, or not in our supporter section, but just next to it, you hear people with you know, maybe a Spanish word that's not the most proper word to use. How does that type of language affect LGBTQ plus fans and even just the community in general when we hear that type of language?
Thanks, Ray, and thanks y'all for having me on the show tonight. I really do appreciate it. I know that this isn't the most fun topic to talk about. It does sound like the team hasn't been doing well otherwise. I'm sorry to hear that. I hope that things get better for this season. We've done our show now for about a year. We really wanted to elevate the LGBTQ experience of the beautiful game, and particularly through the voices of supporters. It hasn't been our exclusive guests that we've had on our show, but it's largely been who we've had on the show. And people all around the world, actually, who we've had, including folks in England, Netherlands, and Spain. And what I've come to find out through this work on our show is visibility matters. And not only that, but where there's not visibility, where it's not apparent from every day to day, every single day, that like we are an inclusive community, we're an inclusive culture, the experience for folks, whether they identify as LGBTQ or not, is almost universally that homophobia is tolerated. Not necessarily that it's embraced or supported, but that it's tolerated. And it's almost expected for many folks, particularly in the men's game. There's plenty of data and research out there that shows that that is one of the most common things that players encounter in growing up in the game is homophobia. That they hear it in the locker room, they hear it on the field. And, you know, one of the things we set out to do this show, and we talked about early on when we were talking with our audience about, you know, why we were doing this, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of gay and bisexual men playing in the game right now. And we know of professionally 6 in the world, right? And one of them in the US, the only person who is out in all of North American professional soccer, is Colin Martin, who plays for the San Diego Loyal. It is not without coincidence that the San Diego Loyal now are facing this again. That is directly the result, I think, of having the only out men's player in the entirety of North America in the professional game. And frankly, I don't think this is a statement on Orange County. I think it's just a statement on the state of the game that we have only one player out in the professional game in North America, and that B, this team has now faced this more than once. They had the whole incident with Phoenix Rising a few years ago where the game was basically just kind of called off. And it was a big statement by the team to basically say, we back up our guy. They shouldn't have to do that. It should simply be, you don't get to do this, right? That this is not acceptable. And I do appreciate that the team came out with that. Orange County SC came out with a statement the day after saying the player has been suspended. We're investigating. We're looking into this. You know, I look at what happened just a couple weeks ago in New Jersey, where the Red Bulls were playing a game and one of their players engaged in saying some kind of racist slur and admitted it openly after the game and was suspended for 6 games as a result of that. And the reaction to that from folks across the country of this was not nearly strong enough. This was not nearly a strong enough punishment for this player for using this kind of language to denigrate someone on the opposing team, to put them down. I think we have to be very clear that this is not a way that we approach the game. We do not have any tolerance for intolerance in the game, for whatever the categories, Ray, that you laid out at the start here.
Yeah, and you mentioned the club coming out with a statement, and I did reach out to the club to see if there was any additional information they could provide. There was no official statements coming out from the club other than that official statement that was released. I believe what they mentioned was it was released about 90 minutes after the match. And it was actually totally on their end. There was no pressure from the league or anyone else to release that statement. And I think even from our own internal conversations with people we know that were at the match, it seems like the club took this all very seriously. The moment they found out what was happening, from what we heard, there was communications, you know, while the match is still sort of ending, concluding, and at the stadium. So don't want to say that the club is not doing their part. They definitely came out quickly and made that statement, and they're looking into it. They're just waiting to hear now at this point, because you got to remember now, a few years back, there was no players union, so you didn't have to worry about like the ramifications of what you do. But now you have a players union in our league, and also you have to follow USL protocol, so you have to figure out what's going on there. But I did appreciate, and I know I think each and every one of us on our end, we were looking at it. We appreciate that the club is really taking this seriously and looking into it. The other thing I found out is, because a few weeks back there was an incident of a fan making a racial slur towards an Orange County player, and the club reacted very quickly, made a statement, says we don't tolerate it, and it'll be, you know, we will take full action on it and make sure, you know, whatever we can find out. And from what I heard is, unfortunately, it's the same for the players, right? Our players or our fans, if they did something like that, the club is going to take it just as seriously as if someone's doing something to our players. So I appreciate that. So what I you mentioned, like, you know, your platform, LGBTFC, you know, definitely tries to, you know, talk about the sport from the lens, the cut the lens there, and sort of help people or help figure out stuff. And I know there's other entities like Athlete Ally, which we've supported in the past. What can be done? Like, what's the best way to maybe, I guess I can't say 100% fix it, because it's almost, I feel like it's almost impossible to get 100% fix on stuff just from what I know the world is. I wish we could get 100% fix, but how do we get there? What's the path for that? What can people like myself, Dylan, Larry, our listeners, you know, the average fan, the average person do to help fix this problem?
Yeah, we ask all of our guests this question, actually, because we're always interested to know what they think is the answer to that. And generally, pretty commonly, it's showing up day in and day out. And I know that maybe is a little vague for some folks who don't really know what that means or what, but that means, you know, it could be anything from inviting someone that you know is LGBTQ to like come be a part of this and getting them excited about it and into it, to wearing something that like a, you know, like a rainbow scarf or a rainbow shirt or something that is indicating visibly like this is a supportive, inclusive culture, to we wave the rainbow flag in our North End every single game at BMO Stadium. There are things that we can do that just on a visceral, visible level let folks know day in and day out that this is a space where everyone is welcome. And honestly, like, I've had some folks be like, oh, well, we did this whole big thing a few years ago, and so they should know now. No, they don't know now, because many of these folks just showed up for the very first time and they don't know what happened 3, 4, 5 years ago, right? Like, all they know is what they're seeing in this moment. And for folks who just came to their very first Orange County SC game this last weekend, if they don't actually know that this is not part of the culture that we tolerate, they may not know that like the supporters of Orange County SC expect the team to respond appropriately. And they may think, well, maybe this is just something that the team will just sort of brush under the carpet or whatever. Like, people need to know that what the team is doing is something that folks want the team to be doing, that the team is appropriately responding to this, and they want to see some actions taken so that this does not repeat itself. But this is a welcoming culture. So however that, I mean, I just throw out a few ideas here of what are ways that people can sort of demonstrate that they're visibly and regularly supporting inclusivity within the supporters' culture. But whatever that means for you, as where you feel comfortable and being an ally, being showing that support, that's meaningful.
I want to add something, just a little story to tell. Luke, you don't know me, but for those people who do know me, they know that I am an ally to the LGBTQ community, to women's rights, to all of it. But I was raised different than y'all. I'm, you know, 30 years older than Dylan. I'm 28 years older than Brad. Using words like, I'm not going to say it live on the air, but that word that the English use for cigarettes. When I was growing up, it was incredibly common just to say that to your buddies. If anybody's seen the movie Fast Times at Ridgemont High, there's that surfing scene with Spicoli, and the guy interviewing him talks about these other surfers, and he says, oh, those guys are... And it was no big deal. And that's the way I was raised, and that's not saying it's right. As of late, and I talked with Grayson about this. Luke, Grayson is my 15-year-old son. I talked with him about this. As of late... Because again, the way I was raised, I have just been jokingly using that word, not harshly, not derogatorily. Just he'll mention one of his friends, and I'll say, "Oh, that." Mm. And this made me realize just how wrong I am. And even though I am an ally to all of this, I still need to get better. People still need to get better. People need to think before they speak, even if it's meant just as a joke. And I told Grayson, I said, "You know what, man? I said, I'm sorry. You will never hear me say that again." And that got brought out because of this situation Saturday night. And, you know, to Grayson, to my girlfriend, Carrie, to you guys, to everybody who's part of the community. And I have one of my best friends is a gay man who's been married for 30 years. And when him and I text each other, he'll text me sweetheart and I'll text him back cupcake, because that's our relationship that we've had since we were 14 years old. But there are other things that you just can't say. And me using that word just in a casual manner, because again, when I was growing up, when I was 15, 16, 17, that's how we talked. Now, today in 2023, you can't talk like that. And you sure as hell can't say it on a football pitch to another player, even if it's not the openly gay male player on that team. You can't say it to another player on the team, because that guy is going to immediately stand up for his teammate. And rightly so. And it's just something that we all have to continue to learn and to educate ourselves every single day and concentrate on being better. I know I do. I'm 53 years old, and I know that every day I still need to try and get better, because I'm still bad about it. Because again, that was the culture I was raised in. Not an excuse. It's stupidity. And I know that. And I'm trying to grow and learn from my own stupidity.
I love you sharing that, Larry. And the kids are watching. The kids are watching. They're watching what's happened. They're watching you. They're watching the team. And frankly, if we're talking about growing the culture of the soccer community here in the U.S., that involves demonstrating that this is a culture that welcomes everyone, because that's what young folks are expecting these days. They want to see something that is reflective of the world that they believe in. And frankly, that is how we make this happen.
Yeah, I love your contribution there, Larry. I was talking with someone else similar to you, and it was, you know, talking about how that word was just used, right? Even when I was younger. And you really look at it though, like, what context do you use those words when you're talking to your friends? It was, you know, using that word in someone like maybe that was weaker or, you know, not as physically strong or something like that, is where you would utilize those types of words. So then you trace it back to, okay, that is where the word is being used at. And it's really coming from a community of people that maybe you don't want to offend at this point. But again, I'm with you, Larry. I was in that generation where you didn't really think about that. It was just something that was, you said with your buds, and you didn't think about, we didn't think where it was coming from. But then when you now look back at, you're like, okay, that's where that word was coming from. And that's why you're using it in that context. And it doesn't work. It's not right. So what I want to say for you, Luke, and I'll let you say one last thing before we let you go on, I'll let you, you know, plug your podcast and whatever else you got going on, is Orange County only has one match in the month of June, and it'll be their one match. It's going to be their Pride Night. You're more than welcome to come out, hang out with all of us for that match. We'll get you that information.
Ray, I'm already out. Sorry, too late for that. However, when is that game? You want to tell us?
I don't have the information in front of me. Who has the date?
Oh my goodness! Ray, you're plugging a game that you don't even know the date. Come on, man.
I'm horrible at this. You know, I've been only doing this for 5 years and I can't get this right. So it is what it is. It's actually on June 3rd against Rio RGVFC at Championship Soccer Stadium. It'll be the Pride Night. I know I was speaking with the members of the club. They just sort of finalized their merchandise or their design for the merchandise that they're going to release for that event in collaboration with some of Orange County's LGBTQ+ fan community. So we're looking forward to that. But you're welcome to come out and hang out with County Line Coalition. Look for us there. I'm going to try and make it out for that match because it'll be the only match in June. But you're welcome to join us. Let's go for this. What? Tell us more about Luke. Tell us more about this podcast of yours. What else you got going on? And what can fans that want to come check out LAFC? What's the best place? Where's the best place to go?
Yeah,
sit
so
and enjoy it.
Well, I mean, the best place to sit at BMO Stadium is anywhere you want to sit at BMO Stadium. There's not a bad seat in the house. I'll say that much. My husband and I have season tickets since day one in the southwest corner, where we can really just kind of scan out over the field. And Vela takes his corner kicks about 10 feet in front of us every time. So it's quite the fun for us. So I see that it's posted here on the StreamYard streaming, but you can follow at LGBT underscore FC pod. That's where we post all about LGBT FC, the podcast that we started last year. We just recorded our 26th episode. We're planning to do a few different episodes for June Pride Month this year. I'm very, very excited about what we got on tap for our audience coming up in June. Also, Pride Republic, which is the LGBTQ supporters group of the Los Angeles Football Club. We're organizing a watch party with the 3252 at Brooklyn Avenue Pizza on Saturday, June 10th, which will be a couple hundred folks there to celebrate a Pride watch party. The day before or the night before, we march with the 3252 in the LA Pride Parade on June 11th. And then our Pride night is on Saturday, June 24th, when we host the Vancouver Whitecaps. And I'm very excited for that game for a number of reasons, but some of that won't actually be known until it takes place at the tailgate and at the game. But that's going to be a heck of a lot of fun. The team is just is super excited about all the stuff that we're going to do for Pride this coming month. And I'm so stoked. But yes, thank you for sharing the LAFC Pride Republic Twitter handle. We're also on Instagram at LAFC Pride Republic. So thanks so much, you guys, for having me on the show. Really do appreciate it. I know it's not an easy conversation. We deal with that every one of our episodes. It's like, okay, you know, there's stuff that's just not like, this isn't fun to talk about, right? Like sometimes it's not fun to talk about, but then every so often we get something we're just like, this is really freaking cool. And this is why it's so important that we celebrate and uplift the culture of the beautiful game through what we do. And really appreciate y'all taking the chance to have me on the show here for a few minutes this evening and chat about, you know, not the most fun thing that happened over the weekend, but hopefully there'll be plenty of other fun things to talk about.
And here's what we'll do, Luke. We'll have to have you on in the future, maybe when we can have more of a fun, you see what our typical podcast is like, where we like to just joke around, have some fun, act like we know soccer and go from there, right?
Did you say that you're sitting on 0 points? Did you really say that?
Well, zero. We just
switched. Yeah, he led with that.
Yeah, you led with 0 points. I thought that, what? Oh, no, that's not a good season.
It's 0 points under our new coach, which
one game.
One game. Okay. I was like,
but we're still not sitting at the points that we thought we should be at. We thought we should have been doing better at this point. That's why we have a new coach.
Well, you get give him like a few games to get into it. He'll get there.
There we go. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you, Luke, for joining us. Go check out Luke and his podcast, LGBTFC. I'm sure you can listen to it wherever podcasts are found.
You certainly can.
We'll look for you at the what is it? BMO? BOMO?
I call it the Mo, after Mo Fascio is the original president of 3252. And, you know, it just he has a special place in my heart. So we call it the Mo. But, I can see Dylan has some feelings about that. But, yeah, it's technically BMO. I don't really care. It's just the cathedral. That's what matters to me.
You just got to go with the original. You just got to call it the bank. Just like people in Anaheim still call it the pond, the Anaheim pond or whatever for the Ducks. Just call it what it originally was called. Let it live on. But if anyone makes the match, we'll look for you out there. What'd you say? What stands can they find you?
Southwest corner, section 125, front row. I often make the Jumbotron. The last game we had, the CCL against Philadelphia, I was on the Jumbotron for an entire minute laughing and waving as they sent their player off with a red card. It was a lot of fun.
There we go. Thank you so much once again for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
And again, we'll get you back on when it's a little bit more of a fun conversation to have. Let's do this really quick. Let's talk about this match. Is there anything any of y'all want to mention about the match against Larry? I already look at Larry. Larry's just like not wanting to talk. I'm assuming you have something to say though, Larry.
I have something to say. What this game turned into is anybody out there watching Ted Lasso? Lasso, however the hell you say it. Anybody out there watching it?
No spoilers though here. You gotta make sure you make your
no spoilers. There's just there's an episode where they're playing their rival and the game absolutely degenerates and like Richmond has 9 yellow cards and 3 players sent off. And literally when that was happening with all those yellow cards on Saturday night, I immediately began thinking of that episode of the show. It's like, oh my God, it's just degenerating, deteriorating, degenerating, whatever words you want to use. It was a mess. And it just seemed like the creativity was still lacking. And the back, I mean, look, here's a fine example of the back just leaking when it's just really shouldn't. It wasn't pretty, and God willing, it gets better, because right now it's just, it's hard to watch. It's disheartening. I'm sad when I go home from games, and I don't want to be sad. I want to be happy and have fun and be smiling when we come on the podcast on Monday nights.
Dylan, let me ask you, how sad is it to watch as we see like a kid like climbing down the hill in the soccer match on the stream there? How sad is it, you know, watching, or how difficult is watching Ronaldo Damas take part in the destruction of Orange County in this match?
It's not disappointing because he's in a better place, which is what I think we hope for with all of our players. He's playing for a team that's actually doing well. I do wish he was playing for us, yes. But this is not the final destination for a lot of our players, and so when they get moves to bigger and better things, and I'm literally just saying this because they are a better team than us over the last two seasons. San Diego is bigger and better things from Orange County at the moment.
Don't get any haters from the Orange County fans, huh, Dylan?
Yeah, before anyone gets too upset. My disappointment is less with Ronaldo Damas in this match and just how poor we were for an opening 15 minutes. It had shades of us kind of being like how we were under Braden Cloutier in terms of just like not being ready for the match, which, if you're curious, almost always start at 7:06 p.m. So not really sure why we can't figure out how to play until 7:30, but it is what it is. And my disappointment with this match is partially us not getting anything from it, and probably more so the rest of the mess that was conveniently skipped by if you watched the highlights. So I would definitely recommend watching the full match.
The full match. Can an argument be made? I'll go to you, Brett. Can an argument be made that Orange County maybe was the better team after they gave up the two goals from San Diego? Or do you still think San Diego was the better team on the pitch?
I think until Orange County can consistently score and prove that hitting the post like Nielsen did, you know, it's so far more than a trend. I think we can't call ourselves the better team until we can score more than the other team consistently, or at least look the better team consistently. You know, up two goals for all but what, 7 minutes of that game, San Diego didn't have to do anything. They didn't have to play defense much, and they only gave up a goal in the 106th, 105th minute, or 101st minute, whatever. It doesn't really matter. We were by far the worst team in that game, and it should have lost. You can see, though,
I was going to say, look at the chart. Look at the chart.
Yeah, but we're hitting posts. We're taking – our shot selection needs to improve. We're taking these weird shots outside of the box that are getting skied over. We're taking shots – we're holding the ball, taking a look at a good shot opportunity, passing it up, and then kicking it straight into a defender because they're having time to recover. Until we can have better shot selection, I liked our passing better this game. I thought – we looked better in the buildup. We looked better. Players were making runs into open spaces. We weren't lofting the ball as much, but we're still making some very, very basic errors on defense, and we're making these horrible shot selections that, even though San Diego Loyal had a worse expected goal, you know, stats are stats. In Everton's game today, they were expected to score two goals, and Brighton was three, and that game ended 5-1. Unless you score it, it doesn't matter, you know, what the expected goal is.
Awesome. Well, guess what? Orange County has a chance to pick up some points this weekend as they travel up north. They're going to face our good friends from Oakland, Oakland Roots, at a 8 o'clock kickoff time, I guess, is what I'm seeing per Google. That seems a little late. We got a guest jumping on to help us out with this, and that's Mr. Peter Bloom. Peter, welcome back to our show. You've been here before. Welcome back.
Hey, Good to be back.
Is 8 o'clock a typical kickoff time for y'all up in Oakland, or is this a weird kickoff time for you guys as well?
No, so this it's a weird kickoff time for an exciting reason, which is that the Oakland Soul, the USLW, I think it's the league, the women's league, is having their home opener, and it is a doubleheader. So that game is going to be at 5, and then immediately followed by the Roots Orange County game. So it is going to be a very long day for the dead enders among us who are going to be there for both games, plus some tailgating ahead of time.
Ooh, you guys. So I guess the good thing for Orange County is you guys are going to be tired by the time that match kicks off, because all the excitement's going to be on that women's match. You guys are going to be like half passed out on the stands and not making a lot of noise. Maybe it helps out Orange County. Let's do this. How are things going for Oakland at this point?
Rocky, but okay. We on the Roots pod prior to the beginning of the season, we talked about the number of points we wanted from the opening couple of games and exceeded those. I think in the first 5 games, we got more than anyone on the blog predicted we would get. And we were really optimistic about how things were going with a 1-0 win over New Mexico, a 3-0 win in Indianapolis. And then we dropped 2 in a row to Hartford and Loudoun. I know Loudoun isn't the team that they used to be. They're embarrassing a lot of people, but it's still not what we wanted. And the offense hasn't really been there since the match against Indy. I know that it'll seem like I'm losing my mind coming off a 4-1 win, but all 4 of those goals came after a red card against Birmingham. And the first one was a penalty on the same foul as the red card. So I think it's a little unclear. The Roots record is maybe better than we thought it would be to start the season, but I'm not sure the performances are.
So then with the way things are going for y'all, and obviously it's not going so great for Orange County this time, is this mean you all are going to sort of overlook this match and look on to your next opponent and give us an easier match? You want to let your players know that Orange County isn't doing too well. They can look ahead and maybe give us an easy match.
I don't think that they're going to be looking ahead. Although the following week, the Roots do go to Sacramento, and that is, that maybe a one-sided rivalry right now. But we really hate Sacramento. That being said, I think that the team is going to look at this Orange County match as an opportunity to sort of build on that offense that has been struggling. Nothing personal. I'm glad that the Roots are getting Orange County right now.
Nope, yeah. Everybody would be right at the moment.
I will say this, Brad will join you in hating Sacramento. So you got at least a supporter on that one right here.
There's just nothing to like about them.
Is that true, Brad? Nothing to like about Sacramento?
Brad's on mute.
He's pulling back.
There's not much redeeming.
I wanted to see how long he would go without realizing he was on mute.
There's not much redeeming about that part of California.
All right. if we're watching this match as Orange County fans, what are we excited about if we see Oakland doing something out there that lets us know we have a chance or a shot at stealing the 3 points on this?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the Roots have had 2 major weaknesses recently, and one of them is that the offense isn't really firing. And the other, which is sort of related, but I think is maybe something to look for, is if the Roots can control the ball in the midfield. The Roots have been playing a 3-4-3 with 3 center backs and then wing backs. And then Eduardo Rito, who made the USL team of the season last year as a right back, playing as a right-sided forward. So, and then on top of that, the Roots have been playing 2 defensive midfielders. So that is 8 defensive players, not counting the keeper. So it is a real problem when the Roots can't maintain possession when they're playing that kind of lineup. And so I think that that's what you want to be looking for, is if Orange County are stealing the ball off of the Roots' two defensive midfielders. Now, last week, the Roots ran out Daniel Gomez, who is a more attacking midfielder than they had been running in that position. They paired him with Napo Metsoso. I don't know if Orange County played Louisville City in the last couple of years. You might have seen Metsoso with them. Metsoso and Gomez had somewhat more luck, has somewhat more creativity between them than the other midfield pairing that the Roots have been running. But if Orange County are taking the ball off of them, I think that things are going well for you.
Peter, first off, welcome back. Second off, where can we expect? I mean, are we expecting to be pressed into deep into our own half by Oakland? Are they going to kind of drop off and use those eight defensive players, or we'll say seven since one is, you know, acting as a forward, to clog up any passing lanes in the final third? Defensively, what do things look like? Because in theory, we have a good offense with a bunch of guys who can score goals. Like you're saying, it doesn't always pan out super well.
Yeah, I mean, the Roots have had success with that press. And they are creating a lot of turnovers in the midfield, sort of in the middle third. I don't think it's like an aggressive high press. I mean, I don't think that they're going to be all over your defensive players, but they're going to be trying to make sure that the ball sort of never gets carried into the Roots half with limited success. I will say that the unit on the Roots that is doing the best right now are the center backs. And they have a tendency to get sort of adventurous. One of them will come forward and try to intercept long balls, knowing that there are two guys behind him. And that has been working to some degree.
That's it for me. So I'm going to just pass the buck on over to Mr. Larry and his fantastic beard.
Nice beard, by the way, Peter.
Oh, thank you.
I'd actually like to hear a little bit about Oakland's run in 2021 to the Western Conference semifinals. First year as part of the USL Championship, get into the playoffs, take the eventual champions all the way to a shootout, and you know, lose 6-5 in that shootout. How were y'all feeling about that team going into the season, going from, I believe y'all were in NISA and then moved up into USL Championship? How were y'all feeling about that team going into the season, and how did you feel about the how the season finished up for you, getting as deep into the playoffs as y'all did?
Yeah, well, the transition from NISA to USL was interesting for me because I really ramped up my engagement with the team when they moved to USL. A buddy suggested that we sort of get more involved in this, and then we started the blog, and then it grew from there. So I wasn't like involved with the supporters groups in the NISA days. So I didn't really have my finger on the pulse of the fan base. I will say, over the course of that season, things were frustrating. I mean, there's sort of parallels to this season, which was that the offense just it didn't have it. The Roots had used their international slots on several players who weren't panning out, a striker who sort of wasn't getting anything done and then got hurt. And then, this other striker, Jeremy Bokila, who you guys faced several times, who didn't have more than about 20 to 25 minutes in his legs. And so the Roots were trying to put together 80 minutes so they could bring him on at the end and try to sneak a winner. And things really turned around when they signed Quincy Ameriquois, although that might be more of a symptom of things getting more serious rather than Quincy's actual sort of contribution. The run-in was incredible, though. It really, the Roots really got it together right when the MLS 2 sides started falling apart. And then, it really felt like playing with house money. And the Roots beat El Paso in the first round, 1-0 on a solid defensive performance. There was a while that we were crowing about the fact that through three full 90s plus the overtime against Orange County, the Roots had never conceded in a playoff game. That obviously fell apart at San Antonio. but it was, you know, it was an incredible run. And because Orange County, because Roots played Orange County to the absolute death, and because Orange County won that year, we can say that we're probably the second best team in 2021.
Well, we'll give you that. We're good with that.
All right. So I'm assuming that that means it's my turn, and I'm not sure, Peter, that's how soccer leagues work. But you know what? Oakland definitely surprised that year. My question for you is, what has changed with this team moving from Juan Guerrera in 2022, and he surprisingly moves to Phoenix, gets poached halfway through the year, to Noah Delgado? What changed with the team? What's improved? What's lacked a little since then?
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, I feel like they're trying to do the same thing. And Delgado has just been a lot more successful with it. You know, there's some change in personnel, but Delgado has stuck with basically the same formation that that Guerra did. I, you know, maybe slightly more. He's at least had more success in baiting opponents into moving forward, so that they can send long balls over and get Rito on the right side, or Memo Diaz / Kevin Wright on the left side. So the wing backs sort of play the ball into open space and let those guys do what they do, which is outrun opposing center backs. I think that maybe it's a simpler system. Maybe it's just being better executed, and so it looks simpler. Delgado, I think, overall has the defense playing like they know what they're doing. Like, they practice together, and there were a lot of games where Guerra's defense just didn't. And so they conceded a lot of stupid, scrappy goals, a lot of second balls on corner kicks, rebounds that were poked in. And overall, I think that Delgado just has that playing better. And to the extent that things aren't going well, it's mostly either that it hasn't clicked or that the offense is failing to put away its chances.
All right, and I got one more question for you. Obviously, with the stadium issues that are going on with Laney, I won't get into too much detail, but I've been to a bunch of stadiums out in that area for you guys. I've been to Laney multiple times, including that canceled first game and the game that you guys had with Orange County at what was the university there? West Las Positas?
Yeah, in Livermore.
Yeah, in Livermore. So how does games at Cal State East Bay compare to that? Is it as windy as West Las Positas, or is it as raucous as Laney is?
It's not as windy as Las Positas. It is probably windier than Laney, but it hasn't, you know, the weather just hasn't been like that so far this season. I don't think that there's probably much of a difference from the player's point of view between Cal State East Bay and Laney. When the first game that the Roots played at what they call Pioneer Field at Cal State East Bay, they were struggling with the turf, but everyone struggled with the turf at Laney. So I don't know that it's that big a difference, and things seem to have gotten better. I'm actually, you know, I would be curious to know if the players hear the noise better at East Bay, because it's much more like the stands are sort of compressed and more vertical than they are at Laney. And I wouldn't be surprised if the fans are louder. It is a beautiful view if anyone is coming out to Hayward, California for the first time for a game. It's up in the hills and you can see the peninsula and the bay. So, you know, it's a pretty cool stadium. I like it better than Laney as a stadium. It is worse to get to.
Let me ask this question for you, because obviously Oakland Raiders leave town. The A's seem to be moving to Vegas here coming soon. Has that impacted the sort of experience for Oakland Roots? Are they getting a little bit more top level coverage? I know you all are probably similar to what we are here in Orange County, where we're part of the LA market. So we don't really get much coverage because LA already has, you know, a million sports teams. So if anyone's going to cover us, we're like the, you know, 12th page of the sports section, if there is even that. But are you noticing you guys are like pretty much the lone pro team in the East Bay now when Oakland A's leave town? Is do you see that as a benefit for Roots in growing as being that lone professional sports team for locals?
I think that that may happen in the future if the A's leave. I think that's maybe less certain than it looked like a month ago. I think that the A's are nowhere near as close to moving to Vegas as they thought they were. And so even if they gave the finger to Oakland, they may not have anywhere else to play. But setting that aside, you know, I think for now the A's are still by far the biggest game in town. You know, in the sort of darkest days for A's fans right after that announcement, I did notice some A's media, you know, particularly this guy who does A's and Sharks, Brody Brazil, who was highlighting some news about the Roots. And that's sort of unusual. And, you know, he carries a lot of water. You know, I think that the biggest change I've noticed this season with the news about the A's is that the, you know, one of the Roots supporters groups is an A's supporters group that has sort of branched out. And a lot of those folks are on edge, and a lot of them are particularly on edge with the uncertainty about where the Roots are going to play. Because it's, you know, it's sort of this double, you know, maybe triple whammy after you've lost two other teams and now the Roots are playing in Hayward. I think there was some uncertainty if their permanent stadium or their sort of 10-year interim stadium was going to be in Oakland or in Alameda. And that has died down some. I mean, people aren't thrilled about this season all being in Hayward, but it looks like the interim stadium, like there's reason to think it will get done in Oakland, and that sort of calmed people down some. I'm as curious as you are whether the Roots will become the biggest game in town, and coverage will reflect that.
I was going to say, it'd be interesting, right? Because when you watch, I mean, this is just an outsider. I think Larry's an Angel fan. I'm an Angel fan. When you watch matches, it looks
no, like, I'm not. Don't group me in with those people.
Oh, I'm sorry. He is a, if Artie Moreno was gone, he'd be an Angel fan. But with Artie Moreno there, he's not an Angel fan. But so outsiders, when we watch those games at the Coliseum, it looks like there's literally no one there. Is that a true representation for A's? And does that mean Oakland Roots maybe are getting more fans at their matches than what the A's are getting? I know teams announce like ticket sales. That includes like season tickets and all that. So A's might say we have like 10,000 fans, but really when you look at the picture, there's maybe like 1500 to 2000 there. Does that mean Roots maybe pull more fans, or are you guys still not at that level yet?
The Roots are almost certainly averaging more fans per game than the A's are, maybe twice as much. It's a little, you know, I think it can be hard to tell because I think that the A's have to an extent stopped inflating their attendance numbers because I think that they're trying to show Major League Baseball that no one comes to their games, and therefore Major League Baseball should help them get a new stadium someplace else. Right. And so it's right. Like, while they used to inflate their numbers, now they're reporting real numbers. But also you look at pictures from the first inning of their games and it doesn't look like 2,500 people. It's a big stadium, but it looks like it's about 500. But going based on reported numbers, the Roots are getting 4,800 and the A's are getting about 2,500. So it's about twice as much. I think that the Roots are probably inflating their numbers some. Their front office tells me they're not. I've asked before, but like obviously they're going to say that they're not. Looking at video footage of Roots games when they show the stands, it looks like as many people as you see at the sort of higher end but not top end of USL games. So like, well, it's not New Mexico, it's not Louisville City, but you know, it compares favorably to the other sort of bigger teams.
Well, I'll say props on that, right? Is if the Oakland Roots are pulling numbers potentially bigger than one of the big four sports in the U.S. I mean, that's an amazing feat right there. And that shows that there's a need maybe for professional soccer in the area. And maybe it's just a fact that people have given up on the A's, right? I mean, who knows what that's like, but it's nice to see, right? Because a lot of the time soccer is sort of that stepchild that, you know, if nothing else is going on, that's what we experience down in this area. It's a tough draw. Orange County's done a great job of growing their fan base as well. I'm getting more fans in the stadium. So hopefully the Roots continue to do so. We got to sort of get into our match predictions here really quick so we can find out, because we do a little game where we try and predict scores. And I know I'm doing amazing at that game. I don't think we have a graphic for the standings, unfortunately. Brad, do you have any information you could verbally share with us for the standings
There is a non-zero chance that
how good am I doing, by the way? That's all we're worried about.
You didn't put in your prediction this week, even though I know it wasn't open for you to do so when you were saying it. You just forgot to do it later on.
Yeah.
Even though I reminded you. I don't know. Andy, were you able to get that? Yeah, so Andy has it up here. Taylor has increased her lead on everybody within the podcast group with a perfect score prediction, but nobody guessed Carrete being the first goal scorer. And for the at-large group, it looks like Kayvon's still the top dog with Josh S. shortly behind. And everybody else, Lucas is there too, but everyone else seems to be kind of middle of the road there, including everybody but Ray within the podcast group.
I'm doing amazing. I'm going to make a late season run. I'm like Orange County right now. I'm doing poor. I'm going to get better. I'm going to make it work. Part of that is Peter's going to help me out with this. He's going to make my prediction for me. And I will promise. I promise, Brad, I'll get it in this week so we can actually count it.
Well, it's open right now, so you can do it.
So we got to do our predictions. So the way this works is we're going to predict the score line. And if Orange County is scoring a goal, who that first goal scorer is. Our leader right now, out of those of us on this episode, it's a tie between Dylan and Larry, so we'll go alphabetically in reverse. Larry, you get to do your prediction first.
3-1, County. Emil Nielsen scores the first goal. I'm not putting that in writing, though.
Dylan, what's your prediction?
2-1, Oakland Roots, Bryce Jamison.
All right, perfect. And then let's get Brad's prediction, because Brad, even though he's really trying on this, he's only 2 points ahead of me.
Well, my magic eight ball says it's a 2-3 game, and scoring first will be Ashish Chadha.
All right, perfect. Peter, what do you think the score is going to be on this? And if Orange County is scoring a goal, who's scoring first for Orange County?
I want to say 2-0 Roots, but I'll say 2-1 Roots, so I get to play the other part of the game too. I'm going to take the money line and say Milan Olaski. Can I take all of the Olaskis? Is that allowed?
Yeah, you get the third one that's not on the team.
We should have made that option, Brad, where you get like half a point if you pick a double Olaski.
Bold prediction, Cotton.
I was going to predict that the first goal was scored by Miko Kanenges. I realize he's not on your roster, but you know.
Oh, Miko, we miss him. You know, honestly, though, Peter, why is it that when I do this, no one wants to like throw me in their bus and say like Colin Shuttler or someone that obviously isn't going to score a goal in this? You guys are all too nice. But there we go. I'm going to submit my official prediction right here for you, Brad. I hit the submit button, so it's in there. So thank you, Peter, for that. My non-official prediction, what I'm going to say on this is I'm going to say 1-0 Orange County. That goal is going to be scored by Colin Shuttler. There we go. What we're going to do for you, we're going to go to our random thoughts. If you want to participate with us, Peter, you're welcome to do so. Random thoughts is we just talk about whatever we want to talk about. It could be soccer related. It could be non-soccer related. Whatever you have to say, we'll do that. I'll give you time to think of something. I'll go to Mr. Larry first because he's already got something in mind. So go for it.
Because it was the final day of the English Championship, match day 46, and the game started at 7 a.m., and I had to be at work at 8 o'clock. I actually called the boss and said, hey, I'm going to be about an hour late today. So I stayed home this morning to watch those games, and I was doing a lot of screaming at the TV. So since Dylan told me I couldn't make my offer to him earlier, I'm going to make it right now. Dylan, you ready? Luton versus Sunderland. Hair for hair.
Beard for hair.
I didn't say that. I said hair for hair.
I'm saying beard for hair. That as the official president and ruler and almighty president, king, whatever we call myself, of this podcast, if you're going to make the bet, Larry, it's got to be beard for hair.
No, I'm saying he shaves his head. I shave my back.
Oh.
I hope to God that is not a like-for-like amount of hair.
Can we? Yeah, so I want to see. Can we just both of you just shave your hair? Dylan shaves his head. Larry shaves his back, and we'll weigh it and see who wins.
I'll shave my chest.
No, for obvious reasons, I'm not going to take you up on this offer. I think we're actually going to have a conversation shortly after we get off tonight about your long-term future here with the podcast, Larry.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? No, my random thought is, what a great morning. How incredible for Sunderland, the youngest team in literally all of English Football League, the Prem, Championship, League One, League Two. Five players unable to play, kind of like Orange County Soccer Club. Five guys who would, most of them would be in the 11, if not the 18. They got to this point and they got into that playoff spot without arguably one of the top two or three scorers in all of English Championship in Ross Stewart. What a season. Nobody expected it from them. Whether they get promoted or not, it doesn't matter. This season is an incredible success. I am so proud of being a Sunderland supporter right now. It was fantastic. It was just awesome. I'll let somebody else talk now.
Are those wolves? I mean, six wolves on the screen? I don't know.
Maybe it's for the six Peter. Goals they conceded last week.
Peter, do you have a random thought that you want to share?
Yeah, I mean, it's still Oakland Roots related. I feel like I have to wrap them on this podcast. Also, is that a Spurs background that you've got? Okay.
It's been real, everyone. We'll see you next week.
There you go. Yeah, no, it is. I'm part of the group of people that would love to see Spurs sold because the ownership group sucks.
No, it's just, this has been a really funny season for you. That's all. No, the thing that I like truly love about the Oakland Roots is all the stuff they do in the community, including stuff that's, you know, I think tougher political positions that even some good clubs take. And the Roots are, you know, standing in solidarity with Oakland teachers who are striking right now. And that's awesome. And it makes me proud to be a Roots fan and proud for all of the, you know, all of my time that I spend working on this team. So I love that club.
Where is Alan when we need him to shed a tear on that? Right. And the correct term, Peter, would be Spursy season. Dylan, what do you got going?
Congratulations to the USL for hiring a man who most recently was let go from his job for breaking rules. So that shows quality management. Two thumbs up from this guy, everyone. Also, be a good person, especially if you're kicking around.
Brad, what's your random thought?
All right, I'm going to circle back to the topic of what happened on Saturday. Remember, it takes more effort to be a bad person than a good person, so just be a good person.
Perfect. Yeah, you know, I agree with that. Let's just, there's no need for words that are not nice. Let's just be nice people. It's what you teach kids in kindergarten, right? Is to be nice people and respect others and say thank you and please and give hugs and what stuff, right? Let's be those people that we were in, that most of us were in kindergarten, where you try to be nice and love everybody and not really worry about stuff. And yes, hopefully in the near future we'll get to hear more information and hopefully whatever the outcome is of the investigation of what happened at the match this past weekend and the result of it is justified and it's something that we all can say that was proper. I will say this, speaking with the club, I know Dan would have loved to be on the show with us, but he would have been able to make two comments and that's all he would have been able to say. Because like I said, there's a union and the league and the club involved in this, but he has promised once this is resolved, he will jump on and let us know what he can share with us on this whole incident. So that's what I would say. Dylan, you have one last thing.
Yeah, I got a lot of flack for criticizing the club in 2020 for their, trying to think of a family appropriate way of putting this, but
sponsorship,
half-hearted comments,
comments
and responses,
statements.
And I'm much more pleased with what they've come up with 2.5 years later. So well done, because it wasn't, you know, it was almost 3 years ago now that I was harassing them for just really dropping the ball left and right. And look at that. There's growth. So if the club can do it, we can.
Well, yes, obviously. And that's what I try and teach my kids, right? You make mistakes, you do things that maybe weren't proper, but what do? You learn from it and you become a better person from it. That's what we can do in this. So again, we don't know the details, but whatever the outcome is, hopefully whoever is involved in it learns from the actions, becomes a better person for it. And we all become better people from it. And that's why we wanted to do a little bit of a education lesson and talk discussion, whatever we call it, who knows. Time to wrap things up. We're a little bit late here. I apologize for that. I want to thank our guests. Obviously Peter, who is currently on right now, and also Luke from LGBTFC, and the president, Pride Republic, the LAFC fan club, that is the LGBTQ plus fan club supporters group for LAFC. As always, the people that are part of the show, that's Larry, that's Brad, that's Dylan, Andy in the background, plus the people that we're not hearing from, Alan, who shows up every so often if he gets a chance, Taylor, who is enjoying some vacation time right now. Larry is excited about the lion picture that he has on his background. Hey, this is Ray, the Orange and Black Soccer Cast, and we are out. Oh!